Welcome to America's Providential History Podcast, where we talk about the real story of America and explore the hand of God in our history. Now, here's your host, Stephen McDowell.
Hello, glad you're joining us for this edition of America's Providential History Podcast. March is the month in which we celebrate or remember St. Patrick's Day. March 17th is that day. Last week was March 17th, the day that the last podcast was posted. And since I was finishing up a series on seven ideas that transform the world, I wasn't able to touch on this very important figure in world history, Patrick of Ireland. And so I wanted to, with this podcast this week, and actually continue the story next week, take a look at St. Patrick, Patrick of Ireland, and how he transformed a nation, which can provide an example for us today of the fact how rapidly God can bring about transformation. You know, America, as we've discussed in previous podcasts, certainly in need of biblical transformation, as are all the nations of the world. But we might ask, can we really expect such transformation to ever occur? Can God's kingdom come to earth and his will be done as it is in heaven, as Jesus taught us to pray? Can a nation experience biblical transformation in a lifetime? Well, first, since Jesus taught us to pray for this, we can certainly have assurance that it can occur. Jesus also gave us the commission to disciple the nations in Matthew 28, 18 through 20, because that's a part of his plan for man living on the earth. And of course, in addition, we've seen many times historically how God has brought about great transformation. We've looked at early America and how God was at work giving birth to this nation, and when needing, bringing revival to the nation as in the first Great Awakening. But probably the greatest example of how biblical revival can transform a nation occurred in the 5th through the 7th centuries in Ireland, and it began when a young Celt was carried to Ireland as a slave. See, Patrick of Ireland was an outstanding example of a man who discipled a nation. He was a world figure, one of the very great among men, one of the dominant personalities of world history, as one historian wrote. He completely transformed Ireland in his lifetime and set the nation on its destiny. His work in Ireland was a world event. One historian, McManus, writes, "All histories of all countries probably could not disclose to the most conscientious searcher another instant of such radical change in a whole nation's character being wrought within the lifespan of one man." See, there was a complete transformation of Ireland from the time before and after Patrick. Great transformation, but as we'll see, that transformation continued on for centuries, not only in Ireland, but God used it to help preserve Western civilization, as we'll take up that story next week. See, the people before Patrick were worshiping idols and carrying the ruthless law of the sword far over sea and land, enslaving many that they encountered. But after Patrick, the worship of the living God was predominant throughout the nation, and the Irish people left the conquering sword to be eaten by rust, as one historian writes, while they went far and wide again over sea and land, bearing now to the nations, both neighboring far off, the healing balm of Christ's gentle words. You see, what he's referring to is that the pagan Irish people for centuries, part of what some of them did to make a living is they invaded other places, other countries, to pillage, steal, enslave people. That's how they made a living, if you will. And Patrick became involved in such pillaging as his providential story unfolds. Somewhere around the year 389 AD, when Patrick was 15 or 16 years old, he was captured and enslaved by Irish marauders. Now, he grew up in what is today England, in the west part of England. His village was not far from the shoreline, and some of these Irish marauding bands came into his village, pillaging and capturing slaves, killing people, and Patrick was one of those carried off as a slave. And he spent 6 years in Ireland during his impressionable years. He learned the language, their religion, their culture, and in many ways he became an Irishman. But most importantly, he was converted. So he was brought up in a Christian home. Christianity had come to England probably in the first century, certainly by the second century, the Christian faith was there. They even had a scripture with interlinear text with their language next to the language, the Latin or Greek Bibles. And so Christianity had come there. He was brought up in a Christian home, though he had not personally embraced that when he was carried off as a slave. But while there in Ireland as a slave, he began to remember what he had learned from his parents and from the Christian community. And so these seeds of life that had been planted in him began to grow and produce fruit. His life of a shepherd, that's what he did as a slave, watching over the animals of his captor, gave him much time to pray and seek God, and he eventually would escape to Ireland, acting upon a vision from the Lord, and would not return for decades after this. He would have been, different historians put a different age. Some say he was in his 40s, mid-40s. Some say he was up to 58 years old when God sent him back to Ireland to fulfill his destiny. He worked for the next 28 years, three or four decades, and during which time he brought a great transformation in the nation, as much as any nation had been transformed by any one man up until that time. So the foundation of his life work and what is needed to transform nations today was laid in Patrick while he was a slave in Ireland. So as I mentioned, he was brought up in a Christian home as a youth, but Patrick had forgotten God and wandered into the ways of sin, but in his captivity, he was awakened unto God. Now, he writes in his confessions, and his writings are really the main understanding we have of this figure of Patrick is in his couple of writings that have been preserved, including his confessions. He says this, "And there the Lord opened the understanding of my unbelief, so that at length I might recall to mind my sins and be converted with all my heart to the Lord, my God, who hath taken pity on my youth and ignorance." He's referencing when he was a slave in Ireland and how God awakened him unto the truth. And of course, as a slave, he had a lot of time to pray because he watched the flocks day and night. And he wrote this, "I was always careful to lead my flocks to pasture and to pray fervently. The love and fear of God more and more inflamed my heart. My faith enlarged, my spirit augmented, so that I said 100 prayers by day and almost as many by night. I arose before day in the snow and the frost and the rain, yet I received no harm, nor was I affected with slothfulness, for then the Spirit of God was warm within me." And so Patrick spent over 6 years in slavery, where he was first miraculously delivered from spiritual bondage, and then he was also miraculously delivered from physical bondage. He had a dream in which he was told to travel to a seashore some 200 miles away from where he was being held captive, where he would find a ship to make his escape. Well, In accordance with what he saw in the dream, he slipped away one day and found the ship just like he saw in his dream. And he got on the ship, carried him away from his slavery. You know, but God used his time of captivity to prepare him for his destiny. He had surrendered his life to the Lord, and in many ways he became an Irishman. And during his impressionable years, he had learned the language and customs of Ireland, and he had a deep love for the people implanted in his heart through his continued times of prayer in the countryside. Well, he got on this ship, was carried away miraculously. It's not clearly known, you know, the path that Patrick went on this ship, but certainly he was introduced to various Christian communities. He certainly at some point was happily united with his family, found his way eventually back to Britain. But during these years, Ireland filled his thoughts. And he wasn't sure what it meant until one night he had a vivid dream of a man coming from Ireland delivering a message from the people there saying, "Come to us, O holy youth, and walk among us." Patrick said, "With this, I was feelingly touched and could read no longer. I then awoke." So with this, he knew, he believed he must prepare himself to fulfill this vision he had in his dream, to go back to this place where he had been taken in bondage and captivity to bring the liberating message of the gospel to them, just as he had been liberated by the gospel in his captivity. And so then he began to prepare himself, began to study, certainly sought out various communities, priests or ministers, if you will. This was really before the time of the centralizing of the Roman Church. That would not occur till a couple of centuries after this, but certainly the Christian faith had ministers and schools in many parts of Europe at this time, and he did travel and to receive training, receive equipping, get everything that he might need to fulfill this vision that God began to grow within his heart. But after a few decades, perhaps in his mid-40s, some say up to the age of 58, he finally went back to Ireland in 432 A.D., which was the fourth year of the reign of the High King of Ireland, Lairi. They had one High King, a lot of kings under him, more like a tribal governance was the type of government they had in Ireland at the time. And so he went back with the whole goal of bringing the gospel to these people. Now, there were certainly people in Ireland prior to the time of Patrick or during this time, you know, had some introduction to the Christian faith. There were probably other Christians who were carried there in slavery. Some traders were Christians who certainly, you know, would have spoke of the message of the Christian faith to them here and there. But by and large, the overall vast majority of the Irish people in Ireland was pagan. With their pagan religion and their Druid priests when Patrick arrived. And he encountered much opposition and difficulties, but he saw God move miraculously on his behalf. He first landed near Vartry in Wicklow County, where he preached and baptized some, but was then driven out of there. He went north and landed in Down, where he was then attacked by Dicu, who, upon seeing and hearing Patrick, then lowered his arms and surrendered his life to God. So through Patrick's influence, this smaller under king, not the high king, one of the leaders in a tribal area, was converted through the influence of Patrick. Patrick later built a church upon that spot where he led Dicu to the Lord, and to help commemorate perhaps his first convert in the north as he traveled north. Patrick then traveled throughout the land. From there, he began to systematically spread the gospel to different parts of Ireland, to anyone who would listen. And many began to be converted over the years and began to follow him in the Christian faith. One of those that was converted and became his disciples was a young lad named Benin, who had come to fill Patrick's place as the leader in the church as Patrick got older, and the head of the school of Armagh, which was one of many established to train new leaders. Over the years, he established many churches, many training schools, and the school at Armagh would become one of the most, or probably the most influential school. And his early disciple, Benin, would be in charge of that. And he's also the one that wrote the great and valuable Book of Rites. Early on, Patrick challenged the pagan worship of the Irish. And after violating the tradition of lighting a fire before the Druid priests lit their sacred fire, Patrick and his followers were compelled to appear before the pagan King Lairi. He was the high king over all the other kings in that area. And as they marched toward the king's court, the Druid minions lay in ambush to kill him. They, of course, didn't like what he was doing, threatening their religious authority and way of life. Now, Patrick had composed a prayer or hymn that the missionaries chanted on their way as they marched. This was later called the Fiad Fiada, or the Deer's Cry. For when Patrick and his companions walked by those who were hiding, those enemies of Patrick, now this is according to a story tradition, it's not exactly known if this occurred in this manner, but certainly tradition has imparted this story. But as Patrick is walking and his companions were walking by where the druids were hanging at, were secretly hiding to ambush Patrick and to kill him. But as they walked there, they did not see men, but a harmless herd of gentle deer, a doe followed by her 20 fawns. So thus they arrived safely at the king's court in Tara. This is one of many supernatural stories associated with Patrick and his life. It might not have exactly happened this way, but it's certainly true that God protected him providentially, used him, did miraculous things through him. This first hymn, his Deer's Cry, was written in Gaelic and has been used down throughout the years by the Irish as a prayer of protection. Patrick's Prayer, it's known as Patrick's Prayer, Patrick's Hymn, or the Deer's Cry, says this. Here's that hymn, that prayer. You may have heard parts of this before. I bind me today, God's might to direct me, God's power to protect me, God's wisdom for learning, God's eye for discerning, God's ear for hearing, God's word for my clearing, God's hand for my cover, God's path to pass over, God's buckler to guard me, God's army to ward me, against snares of the devil, against vices, temptation, against wrong inclination, against men who plot evil, anear or afar, with many or few. Christ near, Christ here, Christ be with me, Christ beneath me, Christ within me, Christ behind me, Christ be o'er me, Christ before me, Christ in the left and the right, Christ hither and thither, Christ in the sight of each eye that shall seek me, and each ear that shall hear, and each mouth that shall speak me. Christ not the less, in each heart I address, I bind me today on the triune I call, with faith in the Trinity, unity, God over all. Well, Patrick was confronted by the Druid priest, who sought to use their magic to overpower him, but according to tradition, God performed such miracles through Patrick, and his words were of such wisdom that many began to be converted, including the queen and several prominent members of the court. Now, the high king, Lairi, remained a pagan, but nonetheless, he was so moved by Patrick that he the king allowed him to travel throughout his domain and preach to whomever he wished. So over the years, in fact, over the decades, Patrick went into other parts of Ireland, dispelling the darkness with the light of the gospel, making many converts, including King Lowry's two daughters. His influence grew mightily to the point where all the serpents and venomous things were driven out of Ireland, which is true spiritually, really more so than physically, because there are no snakes in Ireland today, and there probably have never been any snakes in Ireland. Certainly was the case when Patrick arrived. So he didn't physically drive out physical snakes, but he drove out the spiritual snakes of Ireland as he challenged all the false religions and the Druids. Well, over the years, thousands of people were converted, including many kings and leaders of the people. An unquenchable, burning desire for bringing souls to Christ was the passion of Patrick's life. So thousands, untold thousands of people, multitudes were converted to the Christian faith. But he also worked to bring transformation in every sphere of life. And besides untold thousands converted, he founded 700 churches. He trained and set in place church leadership, 700 bishops, 3,000 ministers. He set up many training centers to educate those thousands as well as future generations. He also worked to transform civil government, working with kings to establish godly laws. He wrote the Liber Ex Lege Moisi, that's Latin for book from the law of Moses, and that's what they were. These were civil laws. They were extracts from the law of Moses used as civil laws in many of the areas within Ireland at the time. He directed the compilation of the laws known as the Sanctus Mor, which were revising old laws in accordance with biblical precepts. And so Patrick's Liber and Sanctus Mor became the basis for civil law throughout much of Ireland. Of course, this is what God requires of us when a nation historically has been Christianized or influenced by the gospel, where the gospel has spread. It should affect every sphere of life, education, government, law, etc. One historian wrote, he worked so many miracles and wonders that the human mind is incapable of remembering or recording the amount of good which he did upon the earth. So, and he carried out his nation-changing work with great confidence in the Lord, but also with great humility. He wrote in his Confessions, "I was a stone sunk in the mire, till he who is powerful came and in his mercy raised me up." So he's testifying that the providence of God calls individuals, calls slaves like Patrick, raises them up and said, "I'm going to use you to transform an entire nation in your lifetime." And the fruit that came forth from what Patrick did, as we will see next week, helped to save civilization and transform all of Western Europe. Well, after saving the life of a local chief, Patrick was given the hill of Armagh in thanks. And it was here that he founded the city of Armagh, which became the center for Christian training that would impact all of Europe for literally centuries to follow. Within a few centuries, the work and schools of Armagh would grow to the point where the place would become not only the ecclesiastical capital of Ireland, but the capital of civilization, quoting a biographer of Patrick. Well, being advanced in years, Patrick placed Benin, his disciple, over the church and over this school at Armagh. In his later years, Patrick directed, as I've already mentioned, the compilation of the laws known as the Sanctus Mor. He revised the old laws in accordance with biblical precepts, and these laws were also known as the Brehon Laws. That's from the Irish name of the official lawgiver. He also wrote his famous Confessions and other work, which still inspire people today. Well, after decades of work in Ireland, he died around the year 460. But his work would impact Ireland and all of Europe for centuries to come. And it provides us a great example today, the fact that God can transform a nation in one generation. He can restore America in one generation. He can impact nations around the world in one generation. In fact, he's doing that today. So many nations have been greatly impacted by the gospel. Today, in Latin America, in parts of Africa, in parts of Asia, the transformation is very significant. But we see God has done this in the past, and the example of how God used Patrick in Ireland can encourage and inspire us today. And as I mentioned, the work of Patrick continued on. He was transmitting to next generations an understanding of how to build free societies. And so next week in the podcast, I want to explore a little bit about how the fruit of Patrick's work transformed a continent, or as one recent title of a book declares, how the Irish saved civilization. So I hope you can join us next week to learn this story of the impact that Patrick's work in Ireland made for centuries after he died. Well, I invite you to visit our website, providencefoundation.com, to learn more about our work and get access to many articles, order books. I also want to point out to you, our new film, Educated for Liberty, can be viewed for free at the website, educatedforliberty.com. Please take a look at it, share it with everyone that you know. I think it's a great tool to help provide an education, just like Patrick understood in the schools that he established. If we're going to see advancement continue to occur in Ireland, we need to train the next generations. And that's what we need to do in our educational institutions, beginning in the home and church today. And that film touches upon the importance of doing that and how to do it. So educatedforliberty.com. Well, thanks for joining us today as we looked at, just introduced you to this very significant man, Patrick of Ireland. Next week, we're going to look at the impact that he had in times after him. So hope you can join us. God bless you.